Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
How dare you verbal trap me? How dare you?
How dare you, Karina? How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
So I do need to say I'm referencing a very specific episode of Judge Judy about Tupperware. When I say, how dare you, Karina? How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, verbal trap.
Verbal traps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're pretty good at those.
Like you aren't. You're pretty good at them too.
I think if someone's wearing the crown and sash, it's you. And I have the flowers and the first runner up.
Oh, really? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we take the crown at different times in different circles and realms.
Sure, sure. But when it comes to workflow, it must just be the Capricorn in you. It's
okay.
Like delegation, no breathing.
Well, I mean, I do think I came out of the womb going, all right, you get to work on this and you get to work on that and you get to work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is true. It took me a long time, though, to be able to do that. I do want to say I was more
to step
like,
into your own confidence about it.
Well, I was that person like you a lot of times who's like, you know what? I'll just do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just better. It will be better if I do it myself.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I'll sacrifice my sleep and
it's
my
like
peace.
The
and
group
my time.
Project. You're like, well, I know we'll all get an A if I just do it. Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
But yeah, you did like you pulled a one over on me literally right before we were headed to Big Bend. We were working on some things. You were like, well, I'm working right now. Could you handle doing this?
Because
like,
you weren't working that day.
No, because it was my first day of break.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're which like, now makes it sound worse. Like you have a day that's a break and now I put you to work.
Yeah.
Is what it sounds like.
Well,
I'm just
I mean,
a terrible
stepmother
person.
Over here. And if you have plucked
I've
all of the lentils out
into
of the
fire,
ashes
right.
by the time the night falls, then you may join us at the King's
the
Festival.
Festival. Right.
But you were like, great, can you handle this? And I was like, yeah, I can do that.
So for the record, I had done half of it.
Yeah.
This was
thing
a task
that
we were talking
yeah.
about. It was this task that involved like we had to do something on every single episode in our library.
Yeah.
And we had to go back in and like adjust something specific. And
yeah.
it was didn't take a long time. It just
was tedious.
Was tedious. And yeah. you had to go one episode at a time. And at this time we have 200 plus episodes.
Yeah.
I had done over half the library.
That's a lie. That's a lie.
I
You'd
had done
two seasons.
Two seasons.
And you're like, you're going to handle these two seasons and then we'll split season 5.
We're great.
Which is what the plan was.
That was the plan.
And you had been working from my house that day because we were leaving very early for the airport the next morning. I was like done and I was jazzed. I was like, I got my 2.5 seasons done. And you walked out and you're like, oh, great. Well, since you're in flow, why don't you just do the rest? And I was like, that, the audacity of that was.
No, I believe it went. I went, so. Oh, wow. Oh, did you finish that already? And you were like, yeah, it went really fast. And I went, well, since it went really fast and you're in flow, do you want to?
This is our relationship.
Mm-hmm. And you were like, don't you verbal trap me.
Exactly.
Don't you dare.
And you did.
I did.
And you did.
I did.
So
and,
who's wearing the crown now?
I guess I wore the crown in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And every day of your life.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of any examples when you have worn the crown.
Oh, well, look at this.
And,
just like history, but, just dictating exactly what I said.
However, they will. One will probably show up at some point.
I'm sure it will.
looking for adventure. I want to follow on the trail or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky. Don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real. You can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national parks.
Father, you are there.
At the national parks.
Father, you are there.
At the national parks.
Follow you, I'll
follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land, also known as Big Bend National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Humanos, Cohuquitan, Mescalero Apache, Lyons Apache, and Chizos people.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast where Dusty is mean and Mike is
kind. Yep.
That's the narrative that
That's
Mike
the portrait
is spinning.
I'm painting.
That's the portrait now that you're in flow.
That's right. Now
That's
that I'm in flow.
That's the portrait you're painting.
Exactly.
We are in Big Bend National Park.
Big Bend.
What a beautiful park this is.
Yes.
What a magnificent park, and what a surprise this was.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I think it was a surprise on many levels, but then I think it also was, oh my God, the desert. I forgot how much the desert is just magical. I think we both were sort of feeling that and like, desert parks. It's where it's at.
It is absolutely where it's at. Yeah. We love desert parks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In episode 105, we had hiked the Lost Mine Trail.
We didn't find the silver mine.
We didn't.
No.
Which you can hear all about in that episode.
No.
But we were now headed to do another trail this day.
Yes.
That is like the Lost Mine Trail, recommended by everyone.
Yep.
And is one of the iconic trails to do in Big Bend.
Yes. And that is the Window Trail. The Window Trail is essentially, the trailhead is at the visitor center. From Lost Mine, we had to take not a very long drive, but a drive towards the visitor center on some windy roads. They weren't scary windy. It wasn't like driving through Glacier and going to the Sun Road windy. I say that just because there wasn't a lot of elevation. There was definitely like awareness that needed to be happening as we were driving. Just a little bit more heightened awareness. The park itself, again, we talked a lot about this in episode 105, just where it's located kind of lends to the fact that it's a little bit of a quieter park. We happened to be here on our first day on Easter Sunday. It was a holiday. It was the weekend. So that being said, when we did arrive at the visitor center, it was a little crowded. By that, I mean the lot was pretty full and we had been hiking pretty early. So we were still at the visitor center before noon. It definitely was a little bit of a hairier situation to try to find parking here.
There are technically 5 visitor centers at Big Bend National Park. However, we have found that at most national parks, one visitor center tends to be the high traffic one,
yeah,
and kind of get title of main visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
And here, that one would most likely be the one that we were visiting here at this time, which was the Chizos Basin Visitor Center.
Yes.
That literally means at the base of the Chizos Mountains, and it was also nestled right next to the lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Right next door to this visitor center, there was a store.
Like a camp store.
Like a camp store,
yeah,
with like food and supplies if necessary.
Yeah.
There was this main road that we were driving. We turned off the main road. The Lost Mine Trail was on that road, at least the trailhead,
mm-hmm,
was.
Yeah.
We continued on past the Lost Mine Trailhead to get to the Chizos Basin Visitor Center.
Yep.
And so that was where we were this morning. There are so many trails that leave from right here.
Right.
And the Window Trail is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing we decided to do, because it was now
Open time for the
visitor center, mm-hmm, was to check it out and to get our patches, have our visitor center moment.
Yeah, so we had a great visit, as we always do, in a visitor center with Ranger Christy. She was just so informative. We sort of gave her the lowdown of how much time we had in the park, and she gave us very, very helpful info about what roads we should drive and what roads we should. When we got into El Paso, there was like a moment when we were getting the car where it was like, do we get a 4-wheel drive vehicle and pay the extra $20 a day? And we're like, nah, we're just going to go with, like, we had a four-door sedan on this trip. The recommendation is to get the four-wheel drive
vehicle. Oh, yeah. We made a mistake.
Yeah. And this is something that we, whenever it's sort of mountainy from now on, we will definitely go ahead and do.
Without a doubt.
Because there was a hike that we wanted to do that is also a very highlighted hike. It's not very long, but it's on Grapevine Hills Road.
It's called Balance Rock.
It's called Balance Rock. And so part of our curiosity was, like, on this day after doing the window trail, could we drive? Because it looks like on the map, or it looked like on the map, that there was a section of road that was paved. Could we drive that and then hike the road all the way up to the trailhead, which, again, the trailhead wasn't very long.
It's kind of
like this terminal view that there are photos of Balanced Rock everywhere. It's a very common and very popular sight to see. And she was like, no, I wouldn't recommend doing that. She's mostly like, people do it, but like, I wouldn't if I were you.
And it's mostly because hiking along that road, she's like, it'll exhaust you.
Yeah.
It would be a long walk.
Yeah.
And while we love long walks and while we're in for
and
long
walks. And it's exposed.
Walks,
it was exposed.
It's very exposed. Yeah. So we didn't do that. But we did get our patches.
Mm-hmm.
I also got a birding guide for Big Bend while I was there. Ranger Christie was very excited to see that. So we had a moment to geek out about birds for a second.
Yeah.
So I talked to Christie about specifically Kalima warblers. Now, Kalima warblers are birds that can only be seen in the United States in Big Bend. You can see them in Mexico, but inside of the perimeter of the United States, literally the only place they show up is Big Bend National Park. Christy had mentioned that it was very early in the season, and so no one had spotted any yet. They had not gotten any reports that anyone had seen them. But in order to see them, you'd have to go really, really high up.
Right. That's what she had said.
Like, we did end up hiking near the area where we might be able to see them.
Sure.
But we never saw any of them.
No.
We saw other birds that kind of looked like them, which is why, you know, I recommend getting that little bird guide from there, because you know what? Like, your phones don't always work unless you already have a little guide. Like, just get one from the visitor center. It's a great way to
support them,
get back to the park in that way.
Yep.
So there are a lot of birds that look like they might be Kalima warblers, but they're not.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are birders that come from all over the world just to see the Kalimas.
After taking some time in the visitor center, which is tiny, the Basin Visitor Center is pretty small. There's a little bit of an exhibit in there. We did go next door to the Basin store, which is like the camp store. Like Dusty said, it's sort of just like merch, and there's some like snacks and provisions should you need them. From there, we were just like, okay, we're ready to hit the trails. So we went back to the car to gear up. And at this point in the day, it was much warmer. It was bordering on hot, but it wasn't like hiking in the North Achenbach Trail warm.
No.
Heat exhaustion warm.
That's Theodore Roosevelt National Park, everybody.
So it did definitely get warm. We had already taken off a lot of clothing on our first hike of the day. And so now we were pretty stripped down.
I was
to the bare essentials.
Since you were in flow, I was gonna let you
go with that. So yeah, this was just like, okay, we knew we were gonna be very exposed. We knew that there was a lot of flesh showing. so it was like
sunblock.
Yeah. There was a group of people next to us that were also gearing up. It looked like they were also heading out, like on
some trail.
Again, there are a few that leave right here from the visitor center. So in the first section of this trail,
which we're calling the descent to the valley floor, the first section is a descent.
Yeah.
So
we know what that
down,
means.
Right. Which means we're going to have to head up on the way back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I do prefer descent on the way back.
Yeah. Girl, who doesn't?
I know. Some people would, I mean, I'm sure there are people who don't, who are like, I'd rather do all the descent now because incline is easier for me later. Mm. But That's yeah. not me.
I mean, we know how I feel about ascent versus descent, but at the end of a trail, I'm like, I hope it's descent because I'd rather front load the ascent the beginning.
I mean, me too. So. Most definitely. Mm-hmm. So we headed to the trailhead, which was basically what we had to do was just east or to the left of the little camp store. There was a spot to get on.
Like some paved path.
Some paved path. Yeah. And then we had to follow a few signs in order to get to the actual trailhead for the window trail. There's like a spot where you can see the window overlook.
Yep.
We didn't do that here on this day.
We thought we might do it after this, but we kind of were like, we'll see how we feel.
Yeah. So on the first junction that we encounter of like, okay, we're going to have to head to the right instead of continue on to the left. There was a bird in a tree that I got a really good photo of, and it was easily mistaken for a Kalima warbler. It was not, though. Later, I would find out it was a Sais phoebe, mm-hmm. but it was definitely a gray bird with like a bit of yellow on the bottom or the belly. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to mistake them for the bird that you thought everybody was coming here to see. Mm-hmm. So I definitely took some photos of it. Was proud of myself for like the composition of those photos, or at least the focus within them.
Yeah.
So things we'll share. But yeah, then we are finally setting off toward the proper window trail.
So before getting on the trail, there was a ranger kind of on like a low rock wall that was directing people which way to go for specific things, you know, and also talking to everybody that passed. And so she was like, hi, how are you? What are you about to do? And we're like, oh, we're heading on the window trail. And she was like, do you have plenty of water with you? Do you have sunblock? Just be prepared. It's very exposed. So I did like this. You don't get this all the time by any means. Sometimes you get this in the visitor center. You have that moment. You're telling a ranger what you're going to do. But it's rare that you have a ranger kind of sitting at a trailhead. But she was kind of at a central junction point for a lot. So I think it must be something they staff if they can, just so people aren't confused.
Correct.
Yeah. And so they're prepared, which is great.
Especially because you have like folks who want to do the window trail and you have the folks who want to do the window overlook.
Or Laguna Meadow.
Or Laguna Meadow, which is in another direction.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was great to have her there to direct us.
Yeah, absolutely.
First off, on this section, it's a lot of switchbacks, which we'd gotten used to over on the Lost Mine Trail.
Yeah.
And there's so much cacti and like plant life.
Absolutely.
And like we could see here like a few times where people had cut through, but we were like, obviously we're not doing that today here on this day.
No.
But we do start the descent. It takes us past two campground entrances.
So if you're someone that's doing this trail and the visitor center parking lot is full, you're able to park in the campsite area, you could still access this trail from these entrances, essentially.
And then you shave off some
trail time. Yeah, yeah.
It is already a lot warmer because this is fully exposed and the sun is overhead now.
Yeah.
But we were approaching this exposed valley floor. We weren't quite there yet, but what we can see, it's the views are kind of like vast and long. And like we can see, you know, mountainous formations in the distance. Very grandiose. What we already noticed was as we would turn and get to different parts of these switchbacks, like we could definitely see parts of this trail coming into view better.
Yeah.
That were
and
a total
and
surprise.
And stuff being hidden then.
Yeah.
Like, the trail just changed a lot while we were on it. And even looking back towards the visitor center, so there's like a mesa that's sort of like, if you're standing with the door of the visitor center to your behind and you look up, behind the lodge, there is this kind of mesa that's there. So that sort of became our, okay, that's where the visitor center is moment, you know?
But it looks like a trail that you can see all of from the beginning.
Lies.
But total lies. Like, it's like a total surprise. Every time you like get to a different angle, like you can see new things the whole time.
Yeah. As we're getting closer to the bottom of the switchbacks, we do start to see a few hikers that have started to make their way back. There were some kids like in a group of like, you know, a family of hikers with some like teenage kids, and they looked miserable. They were like, the exhaustion was very clear on their face. And I'm like, this doesn't bode well.
No.
But also teenagers and teenage angst. So I took that with a grain of salt. They definitely weren't excited about having to hike back up. And I dog-eared that for my own emotional turmoil for later.
Right.
Right.
At this section, it started to feel a whole lot like Zion National Park.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of Big Bend that felt like Zion. Mm-hmm. But eventually, this trail started to level out. There wasn't a ton of, like, downhill or uphill left. We finally approached the valley floor, which is what we're calling the section two, the exposed valley floor.
Mm-hmm. So this is, again, we're exposed. It's direct sunlight above. We're probably inching closer to, like, noon around this time of this hike, just by the time we finished Lost Mine and then drove over here. So we're probably, like, skirting the noontime hours. But the nice thing is we weren't really exerting. It was very flat in this section of the exposed valley floor. And because of this, it tended to go very fast. Like, I feel like we zipped through this section here. It was a lot quicker.
We soon saw some folks who were like, oh, guess what? You're almost to the shaded section. I was very excited about that. We were dripping. Like, sweat was already pouring off of us at this point. Mm-hmm. And so it was going to be nice to get some shaded reprieve soon.
Yeah.
There were very large mountainous formations on either side of us now. Very orange, very large. Mm-hmm.
To the right, it's a little closer, like the mountainous formations are a little closer. And to the left, it looks like we're actually jutting in that direction, but they are definitely further away from us here.
We can see ahead that there's like, we're like, oh, I think that's the shaded section up there.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of became the game. Is that the shaded section up there?
Well, we did. This is there are some trees here in this open valley floor where you do get like a momentary, like a tree where it's like, oh, here's shade for just a moment. And that felt kind of nice. There are some logs across the trail here. I'm assuming to like logs that are embedded in the trail to help with washout when there is heavy rain. And there are some trees along the path here, like I had mentioned, but they are, again, very, very spaced out.
There's also a lot of very tall, deadish looking cacti everywhere.
Well, it's like they, it almost reminded me of like a silver sword from Haleakala, where it was like the cactus was down below and it kind of looked like a yucca sort of cactus. Mm-hmm. But the bloom was this sort of tall shoot that was taller than us. Like they're gigantic and they looked kind of burnt and dead. So it must be, I'm curious if that type of cactus like blooms once and then in its life, like a silver sword does, and then it's just dead. Curiosities.
As we continued on, we got closer and closer to the shaded area and we were starting to feel very excited to get some of that kind of reprieve.
Yeah, there's some mountainy sections. The mountainy sections to our left start to inch closer to them. There are these giant rock overhangs here. And as we start to get closer to that, we realize the trail is about to shift again.
And with that, let's take our first break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. All right, everyone, we're playing Pentagram. So we're putting five things into the pentagram to summon something.
Or someone.
Or someone. What are we doing today?
I don't know. Who do we want to summon today?
Okay, so we are both rewatching basically all of the Golden Girls right now.
We are. That's true.
So why don't we...
Are we summoning the whole cast?
I feel like let's pick one. Let's pick one because I think we'll have more fun and reveal more about their character if we just pick one.
Let's pick Blanche then.
Blanche.
Right. So item one is a steamy romance novel because I feel like she is always reading something that is just... There are episodes where it's the same book too, I've noticed, in a season.
She's still reading the same book.
Does Blanche actually know how to read? Like, it's that joke with Abby from Broad City.
Right.
But I do feel like a steamy romance novel.
Okay, I'm going to put a little figurine of a bed because also her initials are Blanche Elizabeth Devereaux. And so you don't know this?
No, that's
funny. They reveal it at some point. You may not be there yet in your rewatch.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, Blanche Elizabeth Devereaux. And bed. So it spells bed.
That's hilarious. Okay, great. I am going to put in some revealing negligee because I feel she's often in some sort of...
Oh, of course.
Like, let's impress somebody by the outfit that I'm wearing.
Can I just say, one of the best Blanche moments and one of, I think, the best jokes in all of the show is Blanche and Rose are both playing nuns in the production of The Sound of Music. There's a hurricane happening, and so they...
Dorothy's uncle, who's a priest, assumedly
Uncle
a priest,
Angelo,
is staying with them.
Comes to visit, and Dorothy and Stan have to pretend to still be married because Sophia is like, it'll just kill Angelo to know that you're divorced, blah, 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 and he's a priest and yada, yada. And so Angelo was in the kitchen and Rose and Blanche walk in and they have all their, they're still in costume.
But they have their clothes in
their
hands.
They were in the middle of dress rehearsal when they had to come back and they had to evacuate and go back home. And so they have all their clothes in their hands. And Angelo is like, what are your names? And Rose is the one who's like, I'm Sister Rose, to sort of just play along with he thinks we're nuns. We're going to just tell him that we're nuns.
Yeah.
And Blanche is like, and I'm Sister Blanche. And we're here collecting clothes. And she holds out a negligee and she goes, for needy, sexy people. Yep. Okay, so we've got so far a romance novel,
a bed,
and a negligee. I'm also going to put, I feel like we have to put something about Georgia because she's from Georgia, so a peach. I'm going to say put a peach.
And I feel the last thing should be either, I have two. It's either a mirror because she's a mirror on the ceiling.
She's got a mirror on the ceiling above her bed.
She's sort of vain.
Oh, yeah.
There's vanity.
There's also that famous, Blanche is the one who taught us how to take selfies because, she looks at herself in the mirror looking down and then she looks up and she looks so much better.
Or a Monstera frond because her...
Oh, no, it's a banana leaf.
Oh, it's a banana leaf because her bedroom, iconic.
It has to be a banana leaf because her bedroom is iconic.
Yeah.
Because she's got the back wall is, done in all of that. And also the curtains are done in that, too.
Great. And I think we've got Blanche.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
So we finally start to enter what we're calling the third section, which is the shaded section.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of trees, lots of overhang. So we're actually getting some temperature change.
Yeah.
It's still very flat.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yes, this sort of becomes this dry riverbed. So before we get to the riverbed, we do have a little bit of a jut in this we're still on the valley floor, still very sandy, and then all of a sudden we're dumped into what is obviously a riverbed. It's dry right now. Those big rock outcroppings that we saw earlier are more directly above our heads right now. They're not hanging there directly. They're not actually low, but looking up, it's a very pronounced feature, up into the left.
What I was curious about the whole time was what is the window? We kept talking about that the whole time because we had not looked at photos.
Sounds a very I'm in a cult and it's what is the window?
What is the who is the window in tonight's meeting?
Yeah.
No, we weren't sure.
Yeah.
So we kept going, is that the window?
Yeah.
Is that the window?
Yeah.
So we weren't sure as we were moving along.
A little into the riverbed, we get to see this large boulder that has these very weird striations. It almost looks like it's like stucco. It's really, really interesting. It's, again, like when you think about rock, you have to think about erosion.
Yes.
So it's the curiosity here is, what type of rock is it? Like, why is it behaving that way? Like, how did erosion take part in the kind of formation of what it looks like? But it was fascinating. Closest thing I can compare it to is it looked like alligator skin. Like, it was rigid. There were like ridges and bumps all along it. We continue to hike here for a little bit in this riverbed area, which is nice and shaded. And it opens up and we sort of start to get to the narrowest part of the valley. Like, when we were looking from the initial start of the hike to here, this is where that kind of pinch point of the rocks was, mm-hmm. like way in the distance. We couldn't tell that this is where we'd be down so far in this riverbed, but this is where we're at.
We start to see a formation of rocks ahead, and we look up and we see something that we thought might be the window.
Right. We're like, but this would be too soon to be here.
Way
based off
soon.
Of distance. I was like, oh, maybe we have to wind around and get up. But as we keep hiking and round the corner,
and I'm not gonna lie, I really was hoping we didn't have to like go so high up.
Yeah. We realized that we were wrong. It definitely wasn't
it was
the window.
Just to maybe a tiny little arch.
Yeah.
That happened in some via erosion, wind erosion.
Yeah. After hiking around this to the left, we end up going down this kind of like earthen staircase here. Still pretty shady. And when we get to the bottom of it, there is this very flat rock, but it has, again, erosion, this really cool sort of topographical feel to it. Mm-hmm. Like, just looking at it, it looks like a map that you'd see in a visitor center that's like, here's the layout of the park and all of its elevation. And it just was naturally, again, natural formations because nature is freaking kick ass. Down here, it felt like there were a little bit more of like cathedral walls all around us. So there are these just very tall, dramatic kind of like walls. The formations are just really cool to just look up at and just get like a sense of how small you are here.
And because like it feels like water kind of gets trapped in here a little bit easier, it did feel a little more damp here mm-hmm. in this area. And then we approached what is section four, what we're calling section four, which is we're calling it the buzzing riverbed and the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
The dry riverbed that we were on leads us around. We start to come to the section that had like a lot of bees and a lot of hornets, as well as a lot of standing water.
Yeah, it was very odd. Like, it was the buzzing river. Like, the noise was palpable. And it was very interesting because I don't think we'd ever experienced this situation
not like
on
that.
A trail.
Not like that specifically. But we didn't hate it.
No.
It was just like you could hear it so well. I mean, also it's like there are tall rocks on either side of us.
Yeah, so it's like
point,
sort of
so
echoey.
It's echoing in there. But it did, in this particular section, you did mention kind of reminded you of an artist.
Yeah, there are these like built-in staircases that help you to traverse over everything. And it kind of felt like an M.C. Escher artwork, who M.C. Escher is someone whose work you've probably seen before. He's a printmaker. A lot of it is based on optical illusion and math, but it's not just like shapes. It is actually figurative, and it just felt like we were going up and down these stairs, and it felt very much so like an Escher artwork. And it's very cool. Like, this was I think my favorite section of the whole trail.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It was definitely like up and then down and then up and then down around this riverbed area with on these stairs.
Yeah.
And it's clear like they had taken a lot of time to curate this path so that people could get out to what eventually would be the next section.
As we're coming down this last big staircase, we do encounter that group that was at the car next to us right when we were starting our hike, and they were turned around. They had been ahead of us on the hike. They had left a little before us. We could see them when we were initially in the exposed valley, and then they just disappeared because they dropped into the riverbed, just like we did.
Right.
But they were on their way back. And so the last section of the trail is the window.
This is the fifth section, section five.
Mm-hmm. So after hiking down the stairs, we come to this very flat section that has some benches, and then there is room for you to continue to descend. When we get down, we realize that essentially we're here. Like, the window is dead ahead.
We've made it.
Yeah.
There are a lot of families here. There's like a group of kids throwing rocks into the window area, which I was like, I don't know if that's a good idea. maybe not.
Yeah, it was very strange.
That felt a little odd.
It wasn't like throwing rocks into like a river, like, or right. like a water source. This is a section that people like want to walk out to and like experience. And I guess maybe because they were there by themselves, it was like, we're just going to throw rocks at things.
So essentially, coming to this thing called the window, what it kind of looked like was standing on a rock slab that was tilted downward.
Very slick rock.
And then there are these very narrow rock walls that are close together, sort of framing the landscape in the distance.
Yeah.
And people can go out.
Like, pretty far.
You can get close to sort of the edge, but it is eventually just like a cliff's edge.
It's like a pour over, essentially.
A pour over is a better way to put it. I was very comfortable hanging toward the flatter section of this and not getting close to it. You, however, decided to
inch my way out a little bit more.
A little bit more is an understatement. Inch your way out. Of course, I was in the back going like, you better be.
Saying you're no Venus.
I cannot go back. I cannot. If you slip and fall, you're on your own.
Great.
You're not, but this I'm going to now have to go back and
this
get
this is how the relationship is.
No, we're going to have to
since
go.
Since you're in flow, you can do this, but if you screw up, then you're on your own.
No, that is, I would have to go get a helicopter to deal with this, and we can't do that.
No.
No. So I was just like, you can go 10 feet.
At rentacopter.com.
Right. Rentacopter. Yeah, that sounds like Rent-A-Raptor, like a Velociraptor.
But it is very, I will say this, I was not at the edge. I was close, but I wasn't there. I know where my limit is, folks, but I did want to go out a little bit more. It is very slick here. The rock is very, it like undulates, and it's very wavy here, and it's very, very smooth. So it is something to be careful about, because it is also tilting down towards the edge. I did kind of get out a little closer. The view is spectacular. You do not have to go out far to experience the beauty of this view. And it's well worth it.
Oh yeah.
You know, venture out this way.
Oh yeah. And there were quite a lot of people around.
Well, we got there and it was just the families, and then all of a sudden, like, there were a ton of people had must have come behind us, essentially.
While you were out there in your moment of risk, I was hanging back and I was sitting there. And then this gorgeous bluebird comes and sits next to me. And I was like trying to get my phone to take a photo of it.
Yeah.
Or get my camera to take a photo of it. But then it flew away.
And I was, I saw it. Like, I saw it all happen.
And then, like, it flew. And I was like, oh my God. And I couldn't identify what this bird was quite yet. But yeah, that was an exciting moment.
So after taking a little bit here, and as it had started to fill up, we noticed that this family was starting to move and make their way out. And we were like, I don't want to get stuck behind them. So we made our way out and we zipped back the way we came.
And with that, let's take our next break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Okay, we had quite a debate about this word back last season. Mm-hmm. And so now it's showing up again, but as a drag name. Mm-hmm. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Bree Zway.
First name Bree, last name Zway. Mm-hmm. Bree Zway. Mm-hmm. So who is Bree Zway?
Well, she is... Whatever she's doing in her act, there are fans that are just billow. She's got very like flowy fabric-y clothes on that just like wind is absolutely
wind
a part
is
of
always
her act.
An element.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah. I do feel like she is, you know, I don't want to make her a weather queen because we have so many of them, I feel like.
Well, I think I like the idea of like dramatic, like flowing fabric mm-hmm. as like part of the costume.
Yeah.
And I think probably a shtick that she has is like it starts out very gentle and as the song gets more dramatic, like it, the wind becomes more intense and it becomes about like staying in the moment and yeah. like serving what the song is,
yeah.
is giving
yeah.
while the wind is getting just
like too intense,
way
to
too intense yeah. to deal with.
Like, so it becomes a comedy act essentially.
Exactly.
I do feel like, if she was to perform at outdoor venues, she would like paraglide her way in, or
oh,
she would like parachute
that.
In. So I mm-hmm. think maybe she's
or zipline in or something.
I think she is. She's an extreme like sports
an extreme
queen,
sports queen,
but like in the vein of like flying in the air. Like maybe she has a squirrel suit that she oh. like can squirrel paraglide in on.
Interesting.
Like, this is where I feel like she does
the
that.
Camp comes in.
Yeah, the camp comes okay. in. So I think that's also part of like her. Maybe it's her outdoor activism because she's like a clean air queen.
Oh yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm into that.
Yeah. But okay, I do think, and maybe now I'm like going big with it.
Go for it.
I think she performs in the squirrel suit over a giant fan. Have you ever seen those things where you can like get into like a tube and you're in that suit and you just like fly?
Oh,
like I think
I
that's
love
her.
That.
I think
like
that's
it's
her.
The sort of like, skydiving simulation.
Right, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
I think that's how her act is. So there's a lot of like...
And she's doing like Fighter by Christina Aguilera or something
she's
like
got,
that.
There's a lot of production value in her shows.
Yeah. I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm into it. And what is her merch?
What is her merch?
I feel like her merch could
kites.
Be... Oh, it could be kites. It could be wind chimes.
It could be wind chimes.
It could be personalized fans with like her
Misters.
Face on them.
And they like have the misty
the
thing
mister,
on the
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You can create your own show mm-hmm. with one of her misters.
And also she does a double act and the other act is Mr. Fan.
Mr. Fan. Bree Zway and
Mr. Fan.
Oh, a double act. Mr. Fan is probably, you know, sponsoring all of the, or like they have some fan company sponsoring mm-hmm. all of the fan work mm-hmm. in this show.
Mr. Fan.
Mr.
That's,
Fan.
It's a good one. On the yeah. fly. Mm-hmm. Drag king.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Bree Zway and Mr. Fan.
All right. We've made it to the terminal point of this hike. Mm-hmm. And so now we're headed back.
Right.
So we're headed back and we have to now pass through all of the
sections that we've come through.
Mm-hmm. So the first up is the stairs.
And the buzzing riverbed.
And the buzzing riverbed. Mm-hmm. We leave in order to like try and like
circumnavigate
the family that we were afraid might be a little bit slow, even
yeah.
though we could have asked them at any
sure.
point in time if we could just, you mm-hmm. know, cut around them and whatnot. But we don't successfully do this.
No.
So that's fine.
Yeah. But what ends up happening is as we're headed back, there is a little bit of a confusion point as to like, oh, are we going to the right or the left here? They accidentally went the wrong way. So we were able to zip around them to the right. As we're starting to make our way back, there are a lot more people coming out on
yeah,
this trail.
And
it's hot.
So hot.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, I hope they have enough water.
Yeah. We were glad that this was sort of like kind of our finish point or what we thought would be our finish point for the afternoon in this moment.
We do get to the cathedral like area with like the really cool stone on the ground. Mm-hmm. There was this group, I think they were from a law school.
Yeah, you were like, I think they're all law students.
Because they all, one of them was wearing a law school shirt.
Yeah.
And that, so I made an assumption.
You did.
I'm like, oh, they're friends from law school. They may not have been.
Yeah. But there were two people in the group that looked like doppelgangers of close friends of ours.
Yes,
so
that's true.
That was interesting for us to see.
Yeah. So we continue to head up and up and we find ourselves taking a rest on a bench. We just, you know, decided to take a rest and like breathe for a few.
Yeah. After winding up from the stairs, like sort of after, before we got back to the dry riverbed section proper, there was like a very shady section here that had a tree with a bench or two underneath it that we had clocked on the way out. And so we just decided to sit. The branches of the tree were really close to our heads, like it was a low sort of tree.
And as we were sitting there, suddenly one of those same bluebirds show up. We were like, oh my God, let's get some photos of this bluebird. So we do. And then I get out my little
Birding in Big Bend pamphlet.
And I come to find out it is a Mexican jay, a very common bird in Big Bend. But something else that it said is that they're super social birds,
yeah,
meaning that they will socialize with people and they like also socialize with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, if you see one, you're probably going to see like three or four. And that immediately happened.
And these birds are fearless. Like they were so close to us. Like we were not getting close to them, but they were like, we're just going to hang out on this branch right here. Whereas mm-hmm. like most birds are, bye, don't come near me.
Right. But these were like, let's go. And like they were just hanging out right there and it was great. They were, I mean, they're beautiful birds. They look very much like a scrub jay, which can be seen in this area of the world too. Mm-hmm. Mexican jays are definitely seen here in Big Bend. And there's like a couple other spots in the Southwest to see Mexican jays, but there's not like a ton of spots to see them. So it is kind of a special thing to be able to see them, but you will not miss them. They will find you.
Yeah. I mean, this I think was my conversion moment into birding. I will say that.
Uh-huh.
I was like, wow, this is fascinating. And it's like, this is all just here. This isn't like a curated experience. This was just like naturally occurring. And I'm like, this is so cool. And so I think I've like leaned in a little bit more because of our Mexican jay experience.
It's true.
Yeah.
And I mean, those, and they're so pretty and they're like, they just, and they're not small. Like
no,
they were big.
No, they were big.
They were big.
Yeah.
So, but it was fun to see all of them.
Yeah.
And so we continue on from this moment on the bench and from this moment with the birds.
We're moving, but we're tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. The heat, it just sort of like zapped us a little bit. We get back to that big rock boulder in the dry riverbed and we have a conversation just a little past this with a mom who's being tugged by her toddler about birds. We were like, oh, you were like, there's some Mexican jays over there. And she was like, oh, she was telling us about a book she was reading too.
Yeah.
She like, she went in and it was a great conversation.
There was a small, there was a book that she had bought in the store.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen the book that she was referring to, but I just bought the pamphlets and the guides and the visuals.
Yeah.
But we keep going back through the shaded section and then we finally make it back to the open valley section and where it's exposed. And so we run into someone who asks us about seeing like some creepy crawlies, some snakes and lizards.
Yeah. And we're like, no, all we saw was birds.
All we saw was birds.
She's like, okay, good.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't want to have that encounter.
I mean, snakes are a thing that it's a desert park. So there are snakes around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are also lizards around.
Yeah.
So yeah, we keep going. It's hot. We're tired. And then we hit the switchback section. And I remember being at the switchback section and I was like, all right, this isn't too bad. Right. I mean, the Lost Mine Trail wasn't the most exhausting thing because we had done that just before this. And then we just done this window trail. But I was like, I acknowledge that like the thing that's sort of making me tired right now and sort of taking the wind out of my breezeway right now is the fact that it's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we just kind of powered through these switchbacks.
We hoofed it. We had one of the groups of people that was out with us at the window itself had like, they were behind us for a bit and then they summoned some energy from somewhere. I guess it was their youth to pass us on the trail. They were just trucking it. And as we climbed back up, we, you know, made our way past the ranger who was at the wall still. We wound our way back to the visitor center area, took a nice, long, polite amount of time to sit outside that visitor center and sort of planned what the rest of our day here was going to look like.
Let's put the window trail on the Karen Stone scale.
I'm going to say a 5 for me. Okay. It was not really all that difficult, but the return was a little bit of the strenuous factor for me here, and especially just it being exposed for a good deal of the trail. What about you?
I also thought 5.
Oh, great.
And so, right, we are on the same page.
Matching
here.
Here.
So that is 10 out of 20, mm-hmm. Karen Stones. I do want to acknowledge that we gave Lost Mine a 10.5.
We did.
Mm-hmm. So we're saying that Lost Mine and Window Trail are similarly...
Fashioned. Yeah.
And I would say probably so. More
this is a
inclined.
Little shorter in distance than Lost Mine.
Definitely.
It just is...
Less inclined,
yeah.
But there are other things to make one tired here on the Window Trail.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do think it's funny. We did have a listener who reached out and was like, I love listening to the episodes before doing a trail and then after doing a trail and just realizing how like wildly different I would put
sure.
this trail on the Karen Stone yeah. scale versus where
yeah.
y'all put it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we love that and we yeah. love hearing that.
And that's because it's your own personal scale.
Certainly.
Yeah.
It is your own. And let's end this episode the way we end all of our episodes with some Jeopardy-style trivia.
Dusty, why don't you go first?
My category is called Windows Before and After.
Great.
So
I thought it was all going to be about Windows 98.
Right? Wouldn't that
Which would
be
have
great?
Been a good one. I didn't think about that.
No, neither. I think I got started on Windows 95.
Yeah, I think
that was
too.
That was the one.
Let's date ourselves now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I was just simply 2 years old when yeah. I got started on Windows 95.
There you go. You were just
right.
ahead of your time.
No, I would never.
Because
that
you
would
were
make
in flow.
Me Gen Z.
Yeah.
No. Okay. No offense
yeah,
to
that
Gen
sounded,
Z.
That was a shot across the bow, everybody. Whew, girl. Watch out.
For 100. If you used Windex to wipe away the grime on the windows of a church, you might have this before and after.
Stained glass window wash?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay.
Or a stained glass window cleaner.
Okay.
Right.
Okay,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
So for 200, this definitely metaphoric phrase about leaping through a wall with a term that means to look but not buy.
What is smashing through a plate glass window shopping?
Leaping.
What is jumping through a plate glass window shopping?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
You went very specific. I was just going with jump out the window shopping.
Okay.
Great. So for 300.
Leaping through a wall, though, is not like jumping out a window. You know what I mean?
But does a window not exist without a wall?
Right.
You
but
have
like,
to have a wall in order to have
right,
a window.
But you made me think I was the Kool-Aid man there in that clue.
Oh, okay, great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
right.
That's just a note.
So for thank you for all of your notes about my clue writing. I appreciate it. So for 300.
I sense that will come back to bite me.
The thing that allows one to see while driving and the phrase describing the duration during which something is possible.
I've got windshield.
Yeah, think like windshield is a term... Is another term for what kind of very simpler term could you call a windshield? What about the thing to the left or the right? What would we call
a window?
That?
Okay.
In a
window
what?
Of opportunity? What is...
A window. Okay, so... And they're inside of a what? You're driving a what?
A car.
Uh-huh.
Car window of opportunity.
Okay,
okay.
Great. Perfect. Right. We were going to go car window of time or
okay.
car window of opportunity.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay. So
I'm really doing great, guys.
For 400, I mean, you are. You've gotten all of them so far.
With help.
In overcomplicated ways, but yes. This film...
Sounds about right for my life.
This film by Alfred Hitchcock, along with this, the folded piece of paper used for mailing things that contains a clear see-through box so that one might see the address on a piece of paper inside.
What is a rear window mailer?
Great, I'll take that. Or a rear window envelope.
Okay.
Great.
Just making it real. Really doing my due diligence here to just give you all the synonyms.
All the synonyms. And for 500.
Not the right answer.
If this rectangular or semicircular window above a door had a ledge that one might rest things on, it might be called this before and after.
Well, transom is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
A ledge.
So transom, window.
Transom, window, sill? What is a transom, window, sill?
Correct.
Okay.
There you go.
Great.
And that is windows before and after.
Great. Well, I went in a very different direction with mine.
Okay, great.
And didn't use windows really at all as a term.
Great.
I was inspired by the fact that I felt like that trail had a very M.C. Escher-y section to it.
Oh.
So this is...
Please name a category. The surrealist artist.
No, this is a category all about M.C. Escher's work and places that it has appeared.
Oh.
So you'll do okay.
God.
You will do
okay,
fine.
Okay, great.
I promise you, okay? For 100, this 1980s film starring David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly about a teenage girl trying to rescue her baby brother from the Goblin King, played by Bowie, has many direct references to M.C. Escher's work, especially the final confrontation between Sarah, played by Connelly, and the Goblin King.
What is... Labyrinth.
That's correct. For 200, the title of this famous Escher work for an impossible interior space with stairs and no regard for gravity is an important word in this Einstein theory, which in formula can be written as E equals MC squared.
What is relativity?
That's correct.
Okay.
For 300, this 1977 horror film about a dance academy run by witches, directed by Dario Argento, which was later remade in 2018, starring Tilda Swinton, has a number of Escher works painted on interior set pieces.
Oh, I didn't even realize this. What is Suspiria?
That's correct.
Also, let's talk about that for a moment. I mean, I feel like we have, right?
I don't know.
We've mentioned it on the show before, but like, great remake.
Oh, yeah. But the, I mean, the original is...
The original is so good.
And so good.
So weird.
Yeah.
And like the remake went, you know what? We're going to give you that and we're going to give you something new.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Okay. And Dakota Johnson.
Yep.
Yep. For 400, Ascending and Descending by M.C. Escher, a work which features a never-ending looping staircase, is referenced in this film about invading the subconscious of others, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Elliot Page.
What is When Harry Met Sally? What is Inception?
That's correct. And lastly, this mathematical tiling technique used by Escher in his work, where shapes, be they simple or complicated, nest together to create complex and beautiful designs, was inspired by Escher's visit to the Alhambra in Spain, where it was deftly achieved by the Moorish designers and architects of the building.
Oh, does it start with a P?
No, it also starts with a T.
It also starts with a
like
T?
Like tiling, it starts with a T. Sorry, I should
what
have said that.
What is tanagrams?
No.
I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Tanagrams is a thing, though.
Okay, thank you.
I can't remember what it is. Yeah, you don't know.
I don't know.
This is why it was 500. What is tessellation?
Tessellation.
Yeah.
I have heard this phrase before.
Mm-hmm. Also, welcome to the stage, tessellation. Mm-hmm. She's an excitement queen. Mm-hmm.
She is.
And
yes,
that's the
that
work
reminds
of
me of Gypsy. There's a Tessa Tora as a character, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
In Act Two. This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mary Daniela Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.